Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report under lockdown. I'm John Iderola. He is Jordan Yule. How's it going, Jordan?
Hey, John. Progressive that was quick. I wasn't ready.
Sorry. I know. I never know exactly when I'm going to throw to you. Sometimes it's within 10 seconds. Sometimes it's near the end of the hour. But we're very glad to have you here. Jordan is a great progressive activist. And in fact, we're going to have an example of the sort of work that he and his organization have been doing recently to close out the show. So very excited about that. For those of you who are already in the chat, and there's a good number of you, please hit the like button to help spread the stream to more people so they can get involved in the conversation and in the fight that we're engaged in, ongoing. And you can, of course, share it on social media and all of that as well. If you tweet us at hashtag TDR Live, if you send in super chats and that sort of thing, we are going to be reading them throughout the show, so feel free to do that if you have comments or questions or anything like that. I can see already that Simon Suppertime has left a comment saying, Jordan Yule, such a hottie. And Wendy S., I have a mad crush on Jordan. Hey, everybody, I'm still on the show, too, okay?
It's not just Jordan. I just paid them to say that. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, I'm master turfing this.
Some of those are definitely Ken Klippenstein sock puppet accounts.
Exactly.
It's very nice of you, Ken, to support your buddies that way. But anyway, we're going to talk about quite a bit through the course of this show. We've got breaking news on what the House is going to be doing. Spoiler alert, not much. We've got a new estimate of what the actual death toll from the pandemic has been. Fox Nation is shifting their strategy a little bit in terms of what hosts are still affiliated with them. And updates on the lockdown protests as well. So a lot to get to. Really fast, we're jumping into that. I want to give people a little bit of time to sort of get into the chat room. Jordan, how's the pandemic treating you? How's this quarantine going, man?
You know, going a little stir crazy. Can't get a haircut. But, you know, being a reasonable person and not protesting outside of Great Clips to get one.
Yeah.
You know, just staying inside. Do you cut your hair at home?
So not only was this haircut done at home, but it was done by me, as you might have guessed. It's easy and cheap.
Yeah.
Indeed, free. So feel free. If you want to have an easy haircut that makes you look, this is an option for you.
I used to do that in college to save money. I used to shave my head.
Yeah. I mean, look, if a haircut's like $20 and if you cut it this short, you need to get it done every 2 or 3 weeks. That adds up. Oh, by the way, everybody.
Right.
I know that we weren't able to get Francesca's cat yesterday on the show. But Jordan's got a cat that's lurking around, so I'm not saying anything, but maybe at 1,000 likes, maybe we see the cat. You never know. Okay, with that, why don't we get into some news? We were expecting the House to return to D.C. Since they haven't been able to work out some way to conduct their business without physically being there. I mean, that's impossible. How could anyone possibly come up with something like that? So they haven't. So they were going to come back, but now they announced that apparently they're not going to. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer made the announcement Tuesday morning, citing advice from the Capitol physician and a continuing increase in coronavirus cases in the Washington, D.C. area. Journalist Haley Byrd provided a little bit more details. He said that the attending physician points that the numbers in D.C. are still going up and the surrounding area is a hotspot, as well as the fact that the next coronavirus relief package will not be ready to be considered next week. All of that contributed to the decision. So it turns out that even if they had been in D.C., they weren't ready to do anything this week. I mean, after all, Jordan, they've only had, what, almost a month since the last big bill to put something together? How can we expect them to be ready on such short notice?
Right. I think this represents this lack of urgency from Congress in getting back or even just finding new ways to deliberate and vote. I mean, you could have like distance remote voting, you know, so many businesses. We're doing this now in a completely different way. You're doing this all at home. Like people are using Zoom in different ways. There's just if Congress really wanted to, they would find a way to do distance voting or remote voting, things like that. But this lack of urgency in general reflects this kind of divide between the ruling class and just the general public. Mm-hmm. We had this this rapid call to arms to help small businesses, and we saw money going to places like Ruth Chris Steakhouse and the Lakers. And some businesses gave the money back, but just like that was the immediate outcome of Congress's small business relief efforts. And comparing that to the paltry, what, $1,200 that some people got, reflects this class divide between the ruling class and the general public. And I think it's shameful that we're in this situation, because people are now forced into the situation where they have to choose between going broke or going into an unsafe working environment. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair. Those shouldn't be the only two choices. Congress and the government should just step in with a progressive policy reform that would help people stay afloat in this trying time, the way so many other countries around the world are doing, so people don't have to choose between literally life and death.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, whatever it is that the Democratic Party would say that is driving their strategy, like, obviously a little bit of his concerns that Mitch McConnell is going to be unlikely to go down certain roads, I would say make a little bit of public pressure, you know, make them actually hurt if they're going to be making the entire federal government response totally designed to benefit the people who were doing incredibly well before this pandemic, are certainly going to become more rich as a result of it. I mean, the upcoming housing crash that we're going to have when people's, you know, mortgages come due in a couple of months is going to lead to the same sort of accumulation of wealth that the last one did. Do that. There's no urgency whatsoever. I tweeted yesterday, by the way, how many members of the House of Representatives do you think are nervous about their ability to pay their rent in a couple days? And the point was that they're not, and they're going to be fine. None of them, like, they might have more, one might have more empathy than another or something like that, but they're not experiencing it the way we are. Some people seem to miss the point and, like, responded, yeah, what about the homeless? I'm like, no, that's what I'm trying to say, is that these are the sorts of people that are being ignored, you person on Twitter. But anyway, they're acting like it's not a big priority, that they've had weeks to put together something to go in addition to the $1,200. I've got an easy idea. $1,200 more? That's not enough, but it's better than zero. Probably easy to write that legislation when you can literally copy and paste it from the last time, but they're acting like it's difficult. And the issue is that the House is not returning, okay? And even if they did, they wouldn't be ready to do something legislative for a week. But the Senate is returning, and this means that Mitch McConnell is now going to have a week to put together what his priorities are, to try to sort of set the stage for what this next bill is going to be about. And here's something that Josh Marshall tweeted. Apparently, Mitch McConnell says his top priority for the next legislation is immunity for companies who get sued by employers or customers for giving them COVID. That's the priority. Is, again, corporations, it's protecting them from liability when, through the advocacy mainly of the Republican Party, businesses are going to reopen earlier than they should. People are going to get coronavirus. They're going to die as a result of it. We want to make sure that those businesses don't face any sort of liability over that. That's the priority of the party that's going to be determining what this next legislation looks like.
And to contrast that, I saw a headline yesterday that Chuck Schumer in the next relief package is going to fight to get Trump's name off of the checks. And think about that. Like, how many people are actually going to be receiving these checks? Probably a slim minority of the recipients, right? Because most people are going to get direct deposit. So Chuck Schumer is out there saying, no, we got to fight for this optics issue. We can't have Trump's name on the checks. People are already, like, just jokingly calling them Trump bucks. Like, that ship has sailed. Sorry. It's gone. Like, you're not gonna just, like, win this battle. But to focus on that is just some, like, meaningless, like, virtue signaling, really. Mm-hmm. So, like, why not fight for something like, you know, UBI? Why not fight for something to contrast and do a stark pro-worker contrast when you have Mitch McConnell out there saying, no, you can't sue these businesses? I really don't understand the decision-making, other than it's just they're beholden to corporate interests at the end of the day. Yeah. Both parties are.
Yeah. How about this? How about a compromise? Okay. Because I don't want this to be used for propaganda effectively. So how about this? We put, the best representatives we can come up with together in charge of both the messaging around the Democratic Party's response to the crisis, but also shaping the legislation. So you have people like Rashida and AOC and Ilhan Omar and stuff like that. You get immediate rent relief. You get not just putting off having to pay your mortgage for 3 months and then you have to pay 4 months all at once, but something substantive where we help people with that. We get an ongoing UBI. And then at the end of that, also in the bill, He can't sign the checks. How about that? Not just have it be Chuck Schumer pop his head up after 2 weeks of doing jackass and say, I've got an idea. No signatures from Trumpy. How about that be the 12th thing? or the 20th thing that you do as a little icing on the cake. How about that? I think everybody could be happy.
Right. It's just that he's focused on that. Like when people are like, you know, losing relatives, just shows like how out of touch he is. And like people who care about that as like a primary concern. Like, sure, if Trump wants to do that, who cares? Like I said, people are calling them Trump bucks, like jokingly anyway. It's kind of like the Streisand effect. Like if you try to eliminate this or erase this, it's only going to magnify it. So it's absolutely futile. But like, again, it shows like just completely distorted priorities.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, God, and so frustrating. And honestly, like, I mean, I guess at least Schumer will be in D.C. That's something. Like, get a Discord channel and invite the members of the House of Representatives to it. Honestly, let them pick their own avatar. Right. I don't care. They can chat. They can share memes. And they can also vote. Canada's meeting right now, their legislature. Around the world, governments have figured it out. Brazil has been meeting and all of that. They've got their own issues, but they've figured it out. It is not difficult. I played Jackbox games with my family over the weekend. We made it happen. And rather than sketching, you know, designs for T-shirts, we could have been voting on legislation. I think the DC could figure it out, too. They got a lot more resources than my mom does.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So we have known from the very beginning of the pandemic hitting America that the number of cases and the number of deaths are certainly not the actual number. Now, depending on who you ask, they are an undercount or an overcount. From the very beginning, Fox has been implying, sometimes in subtle ways, sometimes in insane conspiracy theory ways, that the number has been artificially inflated to effectively count everyone who has died from the beginning of this as if they had died as a result of coronavirus. The studies that are being done now show that that is probably not actually the case. So let's take a look at what the Washington Post has been able to put together by counting excess deaths, deaths over and above what we would expect to have happened during this time period. So in the early weeks of the coronavirus epidemic, the United States recorded an estimated 15,400 excess deaths, nearly two times as many as were publicly attributed to COVID-19 at the time. Now, I understand some people are going to be hesitant to take those numbers and say that they're due to coronavirus, to say that it's too much of a leap to immediately say that. Well, they acknowledge that. They're being very careful in the way that they're talking about this. They say that these numbers could include people who died because of the epidemic, but not from the disease, such as those who were afraid to seek medical treatment for unrelated illnesses, as well as some number of deaths that are part of the ordinary variation in the death rate, because it will not be constant from year to year. The count is also affected by increases or decreases in other categories of deaths, such as suicides, homicides, and motor vehicle accidents. And let's just acknowledge that while the number of motor vehicle accidents could hypothetically have been affected by the pandemic, people doing far less driving seems like those numbers would be lower than at a similar period last year. But anyway, we're going to have more numbers for particular areas. Jordan, so far, what do you think about this? The possibility that in this five-week period, this is just the early 5 weeks, potentially up to double the deaths might have actually happened as have been recorded so far.
Yeah, I mean, not hard to believe. And it also reflects like a couple different things about the early response, right? So we knew in December that this was developing, and the Trump administration had 17 staffers, administration staffers embedded in the World Health Organization that were relaying information back to the Trump White House in real time.
Yes.
Back in December and early January. They knew this was coming, right? So Trump, it was reported extensively, sought to, you know, downplay the severity because it's an election year. And he saw an increase in case counts as likely leading to, reduced chances of getting reelected. So they sought to slow roll testing rollouts. They sought to slow roll responses to this. They downplayed the severity. He said it would just miraculously go away. All of these different things, right? So we were completely and woefully inadequately prepared for this. And now we're seeing the manifestations of that. We're seeing probably way more people die than expected, partially because, we didn't have sufficient testing. People weren't aware. And people probably, before people like even knew really what it was or how to detect it or look for it, probably were not counting those in the death tolls. Mm-hmm. Across the board, I mean, there's like a big data problem in medicine in general. It's not always consistent in your reporting mechanisms and how data is shared and stored. So like all of these different things like compound the issue. And that's what we're seeing now, like in a retroactive application and analysis. We're seeing spikes in these death rates. This is alarming, especially now as we're probably not even at the peak infection rate. Like that's what's most alarming. We're seeing way more deaths now than expected, going into probably what might be the peak infection rate.
Yeah, and there's no way to know for sure. I mean, they're doing what they can to try to give us an idea of what the range might actually have been, but they're not saying definitively these people died as a result of coronavirus. I mean, they do talk to some individuals. There was one woman who said that they didn't want to send their father, who had coronavirus, to the hospital to die alone. They were afraid they wouldn't be able to see him, so he died at home. And he has not been counted. That's just one individual. It's anecdotal, which is the exact opposite of what they're doing here. But that is sort of how this plays out, that some individuals would have never been tested. They would have gotten sick. They had no one to help them. They die at home. I mean, these deaths are coming from something. Really briefly, let me show you one picture. So this is the spikes that were seen in a number of different individual cities. For those of you on mobile, I apologize. This is going to be nonsensical to you. But look at New York there. So you're seeing that the lighter orange is the total excess deaths. So the darker orange are the ones attributed to coronavirus. Now, I understand some people are very hesitant to say those extra deaths are from coronavirus. Was it Godzilla? What exactly was happening in that period of time that was killing so many thousands of additional people, if not coronavirus? Was it bad burritos? What was so deadly in that period of time that wasn't there the weeks before it? I mean, and again, some people, especially like personalities on Fox for, 2 months now, their identity has been, no matter what happens, we're going to say that the number of deaths isn't high enough to impress us. It's only one Vietnam so far. And anyway, it's not Trump's fault because they, like you said, they see it through the electoral lens of how is this going to impact his reelection chances. And so they're never going to acknowledge this. But people who are worried about this, who want to stop future pandemics, they are looking at these numbers. This is not definitive. There's going to be future tests and everything like that. But as bad as it already is, and I personally would count 55,000 plus Americans dying in just the period of a couple of months as an absolute tragedy, perhaps the biggest of our life domestically, it looks like it's actually worse than that. We just don't know how much worse at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know really what to say other than that's horrifying. And I just wish that people would have taken it seriously. I wish that Fox wouldn't have downplayed the severity because, even though you or I or your viewers might not watch Fox, millions of people do. And those people believing that this wasn't an issue likely led to the spread of it. That's why they're getting sued, or likely being sued. It's just, you can do so much, but at the end of the day, if it's not a collective effort, we're only as strong as our weakest link. And that people would just willfully ignore, and even in some cases flaunt, guidelines for social distancing or stay-at-home orders, they're just putting everyone else in harm's way. And, a lot of people who might otherwise be with us are not now. So it's not just about staying home to protect yourself. It's about staying home to protect those around you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the sad thing, too, is that this is not a thing where, and like you have to keep saying this because you hope that eventually it'll get through to some of these right-wingers. This is not a thing where you just get to decide for yourself what risk you're going to have of contracting or dying from coronavirus. That is not how it works. By you putting yourself out there, you put everyone you come into contact with later potentially at risk. And we're 2 months into this, we're many tens of thousands of deaths into this, and they still don't accept this. Just yesterday at his press conference, and look, we're trying to cover it less. We're literally not doing any stories about his press conference today. Trump said we're going to reopen the schools because kids seem to do pretty well with coronavirus, except the fact that they can get it and then spread it to every one of their family members. Like, it's how many grandmas are going to die because their kids are forced to go back to school and then they eventually spread it to their parents and to their like it feels so pointless in the face of this horrendous daily tragedy that we're experiencing to try to break through to people whose entire worldview has been shaped by a lack of understanding, respect, or concern for science. Since the beginning of the anti-lockdown protests, we've been saying that the obvious end result of these efforts is going to be that some of the people that participate it get diagnosed with coronavirus, and our fear is that some of them might eventually die as a result of that. Well, we don't have that necessarily just yet, but we do have one fairly ironic spin, and that is that one of the leaders of Reopen NC, the movement against Governor Roy Cooper's stay-at-home order, posted on Facebook that she tested positive for coronavirus. This is Audrey Whitlock, who we previously talked about on the show, actually. Missed the group's first two rallies while she was in quarantine. She wrote on Facebook that her quarantine ended on Sunday and ended her post with, "See you Tuesday." So at this point, it looks like she has mostly gotten through it. She says that she is either totally or mostly asymptomatic. So that's good. I don't want anyone to suffer or die from this virus. But she is telling people to ignore the stay-at-home orders, ignore the social distancing, and get out there and contract the thing that she was apparently lucky enough to not suffer from.
I don't know. It's tough to be sympathetic. It really is, because they know what's happening. And maybe they're misguided. And maybe part of it is that they're being forced into this situation, like we mentioned earlier. You know, it's like a lot of people who I've just known and just, you know, maybe have just different opinions than me, and I think mean well in general. I think a lot of people I know personally, I just think that they're forced into the situation where they have to choose between going back to work or going broke. And that's not a situation they should be forced into. And I'm not saying this is every person at that protest. And I think there are elements of like hate groups embedded in some of these protest groups. But it's tough to be sympathetic for people who are in this situation, because you know what's happening. You should listen to health guidelines, and you should listen to CDC guidelines and stay-at-home orders, because again, like we just mentioned, it's not just about you, it's about people around you and spreading it to people, and how you can give it to one person who might give it to an elderly person in their home.
Yeah,
you know, it's more than just you. But again, like, I really want to hammer the point that like they should not be forced into the situation where they have to go back to work into these tough situations. And I do know people who want to get back to work because they are broke and they have no income.
Yeah.
And they feel like people who, you know, like you and I who have work right now, they feel like we're just saying that because we're in a position of privilege. Maybe, but like it's ultimately that the government should step in to help you. That's the solution.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's say that we have a position of privilege, which we certainly do in a number of different ways. I think an important follow-up question is, what are you using that position of privilege to accomplish? If you have been lucky enough to be given a platform, what are you using that platform to accomplish? We're saying the government should be doing everything it can, which is far more than what it's doing, to stop people from having to choose between their health and their economic future. That is not what everyone is doing. You know, like how many people in you know, conservative media right now, wealthy people, heirs to, you know, frozen food fortunes, are out there saying these quarantines are a complete waste of time. You should go back right now to work. And if you die, sad for you, I'm going to be okay. Who's doing that? Trump was exposed to coronavirus early on. Everyone seems to have forgotten that. Was lucky enough to have not gotten it. He's now being tested every week because while he seems to want to imply that this is not serious, he's obviously taking it seriously. He got through it just fine, and now he wants everyone else to go back out there and get exposed again. Yes, some people are insulated from it more than others, but it all comes down to what are you using that privilege for? And, you know, people like this, the organizers of this, who are being given money by these billionaires and by these organizations that are always there to prop up these astroturfed right-wing organizations, she's apparently going to be fine. She doesn't seem overly concerned with if all of the people that follow her call and go out in the streets, if they end up being fine.
Right, that's an important point. Like, these efforts, you know, some people are going there because that's what they believe, but the organization of these and the promotion of these was largely a coordinated effort, and likely, I mean, you know, probably from a handful of culprits, all of them reflecting corporate business interests.
Yeah.
These are people who this is affecting their bottom line. So they propped up all of these Facebook events and appealed to people who are misled, misguided by right-wing media in conning them into thinking this is about their freedom or their liberty or their autonomy or whatever. And really, it's just that these companies want these people to get back to work. So it helps them, you know, boost their profitability, boost their revenue. It's not about freedom or liberty or anything like that, because you're like literally jeopardizing other people's health and safety. This is like Koch brothers and Alec and groups like that. And the companies that they represent who are pushing this idea. It's absolutely bogus, and I wish people would just realize this.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, look, as we've sort of been saying from early on, the most important reason to not prematurely reopen is concern for people's health. But also, I don't even think it's going to have the economic results. Lots of economists don't think that it's going to have the economic results that some of these Republican politicians are thinking. Because, look, obviously, they look out for corporate interests. They're going to continue to do that. But the only thing more important to them than that is the continuation of their careers in politics. And so they're willing to roll the dice on reopening, even if it means that people die, the chance that it might be better economically, not the certainty that it's going to be better economically. It could be an absolute disaster. Many businesses are going to be the site for the spread of coronavirus. It's going to be tracked to them, since we've got these people who are tracking contact now around the country. How many businesses are going to want long term for their reputation to be tied in with the fact that there was a huge outbreak of coronavirus at, you know, AMC theaters or whatever, the businesses that they're inspiring to open right now? So at the end of the day, yes, they're watching out for the corporations, but they're more so watching out for themselves, and they're willing to let it all burn down. One of the best side effects of following Ken Klippenstein on Twitter is that he is great. He is a watchdog for hypocrisy coming from the right. And I saw a few examples having to do with right-wing pundits and personalities on these lockdown protests. And so I want to show just a few that I saw that he was either tweeting, putting together himself, or retweeting. So one involves Tommy Lahren, who had this to say: compliance starting to look a whole lot like willful slavery. Now, you're not going to find that tweet on her profile right now, because as shameless as she is, she has just enough shame that she deleted that not long after posting it. But it was there, which is interesting, because previously she had a different view on protests. For instance, when she said about Colin Kaepernick, "This clown is likening his struggle to play professional football to slavery. How does that not piss off those whose ancestors lived through true racial persecution, or those who fought actual injustice in the civil rights movement?" So, civil rights advocate Tommy Lahren didn't like people using slavery to push their message back when it was Colin Kaepernick peacefully kneeling on a football field, and notably not spreading coronavirus by doing it. But now, if we go along with this, we're no better than slaves, Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, even the phrase willful slavery, just think about that for a second.
Yeah, what does she think that slavery is?
Yeah. You like signed up. It was like an internship. God damn. I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
No, you are. You are. They weren't poorly paid. They were slaves. God. Yeah.
Willful slavery is a really funny term. But again, it just reflects such, like, the people that are propped up by right-wing media institutions are just kind of like useful idiots. Mm-hmm. Tommy Lahren is just, oh, good God. It's just kind of like the lowest common denominator type arguments. Pandering to, you know, just the typical, like, falling back on the Second Amendment, an absolutist First Amendment thing when it's convenient. Just patriotic, like, fascist garbage. I mean, the hypocrisy isn't really new for her. This is the same person who had American flag themed yoga pants. Her line of American flag themed yoga pants that went for like $90 a pair, but they were made in China.
Exactly.
After like championing Trump's like Made in America legislation or efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, you know, at the end of the day, all these people lean into that type of rhetoric when it's convenient for personal gain. But if it comes down to it, she's going to go wherever the lowest cost of labor is, or wherever, you know, wherever the crowd is going, so she could like benefit the most, profit the most, and increase her reach the most.
Exactly.
She's an opportunist.
And, you know, it was just like a week ago, I think, that Charlie Kirk, because now the thing is, you know, whip up people in a frenzy to hate China to protect Donald Trump. So he was like, no one should ever buy a product made in China ever again. And I considered like putting like he's like subtweeting Tommy Lahren for her thing there. But it feels good sometimes to point out the hypocrisy. It doesn't really generally seem to get through to people. Like when it was found that her yoga pants were made in China, like what percentage of her like devoted fans were like, hey, that's super hypocritical. I don't know about this, right? Tommy Lahren. Maybe 1 in 100, maybe. But she's not the only one. We've also got this from Matt Walsh. You might see him occasionally on Twitter. He had this to say. A guy in Colorado was cuffed and arrested in front of his 6-year-old daughter for playing t-ball with her in an empty park. People keep assuring me that we're not living in a police state. Well, tell me what a police state looks like, if not like this. So he was stopped, you know, when he was playing baseball or whatever, and police were super mean to him. And so Matt Walsh is protecting him, which is slightly different than what he had to say previously when he said, how many times do cops have to ask nicely before they can force the issue? 10 times? 27? 58? What's the magic number, Black Lives Matter crew? So when the police are violating your rights, it seems to depend what you're protesting against, whether he's going to be on your side or not there. So people who don't want to be beaten or killed by the police, just abide by what the police say. Honestly, why are you making a big fuss about this? But somebody who's being asked to not congregate in a public area for a limited period of time to protect other people's lives. I mean, come on, police. Why are you being so mean?
Right. I mean, this is just like, I mean, that one is just like soaked in white privilege. The fact that, like, you know, he's maligning Black Lives Matter in the latter tweet. And an example that comes to mind is Tamir Rice. Tamir Rice is a 12-year-old kid in Cleveland who's playing in the park.
Yeah.
Cops drove up and within like literally like 2 to 3 seconds got out of the car and shot and killed him.
Yeah.
It was just horrifying, and it was absolute crickets, or in some cases justification from people on the right. So to see that a 12-year-old child murdered in cold blood by Cleveland police, and absolute like just total blind spot from the right. But here a guy playing in the park just gets arrested and still is alive, knowing like he wasn't even supposed to be there in the first place. Yeah, sure, hypocrisy, and I don't know if people will actually care on the right, but it is. It's a mix of hypocrisy and white privilege.
100%. And again, we point it out because, hey, it is hypocrisy, and that matters to us. Also, it's a little bit fun, but not because it's going to make any difference, because the grift goes on. You can't stop that train, baby. For weeks now, Diamond and Silk, journalists on Fox Nation, have been spreading increasingly bizarre, deranged conspiracy theories around coronavirus to potentially millions and millions of Fox viewers. Apparently those days are now done, because like Trish Regan, there are some people on Fox who can say whatever they want and they will be fine no matter what, and others who, there is a line. It's beyond the bounds of reason, but not beyond the bounds of them potentially reaching it, because Diamond and Silk have apparently been pushed out. A source with knowledge told the Daily Beast, after what they've said and tweeted, you won't be seeing them on Fox Nation or Fox News anytime soon. And apparently they have not been guests on Fox News, like the actual TV version, for several weeks now, and they also have not had a new episode of their show on Fox Nation for some time. So in a minute, we're going to give you a few examples of the things that they said, but Jordan, are you surprised that they apparently crossed that line? They seem to be such superstars on Fox Nation up until now.
Yeah, they had been. I mean, they are pretty common, well-known figures on the right for their just blind support of right-wing causes and interests. I am kind of surprised that Fox took action, but after seeing the things that they had said and done, sure, it made sense. But it really shows, like, the line is pretty far out there. There is one, but it's far out there, and it's also inconsistent. Like, You're not going to fire like a Hannity or a Tucker or an Ingram. You're not going to fire like a flagship host. But people on the fringes, on people on Fox Nation, like the streaming service, they are dispensable because it opens up the door. It's like the liability for Fox at the end of the day. I don't think Tucker would say similar things or the identical things that they said, but it's a little bit inconsistent in their application of these quote standards. I would argue there aren't any at the end of the day. It's just how much can they get away with before outrage hits a critical mass. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still on the Trump campaign.
Yeah. They're still co-chairs of Black Voices for Trump. So they're still going, and Trump is going to make an appearance in just a little bit in this story. But let me give people a little bit of an idea of some of the things that they've been saying. Some of these we've covered on the show previously, and understand that there's some theories, I'll say, that they've spread that others have. So, for instance, the idea that the death count has been artificially inflated, it's just being made up. Laura Ingraham has said that. Lots of them say that. There's some things that they said that others have not delved into, although I don't rule out it in the future. Let's see. So in a live stream, they speculated that 5G, the fifth generation of mobile technology that's being rolled out across the world, can, quote, throw your body off and mess with, quote, your genetics. On coronavirus deaths, Silk had said at the time there was a certain number of cases, a certain number of deaths. Instantaneously, you had the media calling President Trump out. He wanted open by Easter. He want this open by Easter. Me and you was talking. I said, now watch the numbers of deaths go up, to which Diamond responds, right. Silk says, watch everything increase because they wanted to make it look bad in front of our eyes, effectively saying that the media, to make Trump look bad for saying, let's open the country again on Easter, they're just going to make up a number that looks bad, that it's not reporting from hospitals and health professionals. It's just a hoax. I guess it would be deaths, deaths, deaths is the notation that they use these days.
Yeah.
Just made up. Can we go to one example of this? We very rarely play any Diamond and Silk videos on the show, but I did see one. This is from Media Matters, because some of this is going to be hard to follow. If they're in certain places, I believe that she's talking about 5G towers here. So,
and if they're in certain places, the frequency of that can really throw your body off.
Your genetics,
and have your body dis-ease.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a doctor. I'm just going on what they were saying about that. This is what they're saying about that.
Science is saying.
And it can also cause for your genetic material to test for COVID-19. Now, right. I don't know how true that is, but I believe somebody should look into it. Why are towers going up in our country if they haven't been tested to make sure that we as the American people can handle it?
Okay, so they go on to say that the hospital beds are empty. It's this theory that nobody is actually sick with coronavirus, which is, it's weird to, on the one hand, say coronavirus is real. It's being given to you by 5G towers and possibly Bill Gates, because they also talked about that. He wants to kill you too, but also no one is dying from coronavirus. They really want to have it both ways. It's like wealthy elites are giving you coronavirus to kill you and no one is dying from coronavirus. And we don't know how true that is, but people should look into it. Don't say it if you don't know if it's true.
Well, John, to their point, they are saying, you know, they're just like, that's what they're saying. It's science. Science is saying this. So I don't know how you can argue with that.
I don't think I can much more, but let's see. So other things they've said, so they said that they're not going to take any COVID-19 vaccine that Bill Gates is involved with because he's pushing for population control. So he's going to kill people or I don't know. And I saw Candace Owens also said that no matter what, from anyone, she's not taking a vaccine for coronavirus. It's awesome. Dying of a potentially preventable disease to own the libs is one way to live your life. They had previously said that the WHO, quote, has a switch to turn this virus on and off. Do you have a switch? And they claim that Democrats like the problem and they want to create the problem to keep the problem going. So the media made up the deaths, or the problem's real and the Democrats want it to be real, so they have made it. I don't know. I don't watch the show. I don't know what it's like to have my mind be empty but incredibly flexible at the same time to believe whatever is told to me in real time that way. I don't know. But you know who does like it, Jordan? You want to know who is still sticking with them after they've been let loose?
Oh, let's hear it.
Donald Trump tweeted this morning.
There we go.
But I love Diamond and Silk, and so do millions of people. Journalists were tripping over themselves to say, he seems to get it a few weeks ago. He's serious now. That was before Drink Bleach, okay? And now he's saying, you need to give it to the people who are saying 5G towers are giving you coronavirus, which also is made up, and don't take the vaccine that Trump himself is saying we're going to have soon, because it will lead to population control. I don't know what, does Candace Owen get that Trump is pushing for the vaccine to be made as soon as possible? The vaccine that she and others won't take because it's a Bill Gates plot? I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. In a week or two, we're going to see some Politico reporter or New York Times reporter tweet out that we're seeing a new tone and tenor from Trump. He's turned a page. This is the day he became president. I mean, these types of things, that just like, I don't know, they get caught up in optics because largely they're insulated from the consequences. But like, if that's their focus, like, how does he sound instead of like the actual substance and consequence? Mm-hmm. It really begs the question, like, why are they in these positions to begin with? So I think there's just like across the board in a lot of these pundit positions at mainstream institutions, just like they're so out of touch. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking a couple weeks ago, it was Dana Bash at CNN had some like comment where she was like, wow, what a remarkable tone from President Trump here. Ugh. Very presidential. And then like 2 weeks later, he was saying it was like miraculously going to go away.
Yeah. Just everybody keep calm. It's going to go away. Wait a second. I'm hearing. Okay. Breaking news. This is good because him standing beside Diamond and Silk after spreading these conspiracy theories would sound really bad. That tweet turns out he was just tweeting sarcastically, everybody. Don't worry. Oh. It was a sarcastic tweet based purely on the reaction after the fact. It's sarcastic. No, he hasn't actually said that. He's totally with them. But trust me, if it starts to hurt him, he will have been being sarcastic. Move On has a new ad, and since we have someone who can speak to the organization and its efforts, we're going to take a look at this ad and then get some commentary.
The virus, a lot of people think that goes away in April with the heat. We're in great shape.
America is hurting tonight, from the stunning new unemployment numbers to the still climbing death toll.
I was just calling to check on him, and that's how I found out he was gone.
The virus looks like by April, you know, in theory, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away.
For the first time in history, all 50 states are now under major disaster declarations.
COVID-19 is becoming like a sniper in the viral war, silently taking out healthcare workers.
When we get into April and the warmer weather, let's see what happens, but I think it's going to work out fine.
Staggering new developments in the pandemic. The death toll from the virus keeps rising.
Among the hardest hit, the nation's nursing homes.
It's hard for me to fathom. I mean, he went so quick.
That will go away in April.
Looks like by April, miraculously goes away.
We're in great shape.
Jordan, that's pretty effective. That some of those quotes, seeing people speak about the people that they knew that have passed, that is just devastating.
Yeah, the creative lab at Move On does fantastic work, consistently inspired by how they're able to, you know, cut through the noise and find people in frontline communities who are directly impacted by the consequences of Trump's inadequate leadership. So you shout out to Olga and Ann, who worked on that video and put it out, and it's now a part of an ad buy targeting key swing states to show people in critical voting blocks that, look, this is largely a product of Trump's inadequate leadership, his poor response, and how he tried to, like as we mentioned earlier in the show, politicize this crisis and downplay the severity because he thought that would impact his reelection chances. So taking that message directly to voters, I think, is a really smart strategy. But it also shows, like, this type of leadership or lack thereof leads to real world consequences, in some cases death. Mm-hmm. So, you know, always something to be mindful of. But yeah, again, MoveOn's Creative Lab does fantastic work taking that messaging and going directly to the voters with it instead of some roundabout convoluted way that maybe other groups might take.
Exactly. And look, honestly, I hope that other Democratic organizations and indeed candidacies pay attention to work like that, because they've just seemed to lag so far behind. And you've probably seen over the course of the past 6 months or so, there's more and more of these Republican organizations. Generally, they're never Trumper organizations that have been coming out with devastating ads targeting different Republicans who continue to support the president. And especially when the target is the president, like what you just saw in that ad, no one has ever produced enough material out of their own mouth willingly that will be devastating if you simply play it back to people. And that right there, that should be the model. We should see 100, 1,000 more ads like that running between now and the general election. So I hope that people in power are paying attention.
Oh yeah, I hope so too. And I think there's, you can get caught up in this using Trump's words and playing it back to him. You can kind of get caught up in that in a more of an out of touch way. Hmm. So I think some people will be like, this is so indecent. He's violating the norms of the office. You know, he's not upholding the dignity of the Oval Office. So that really doesn't like resonate with people who are just like working 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet. That doesn't like matter to people who really haven't seen any material impact or improvement in their lives for the past couple decades. So like to frame it in this like elitist beltway framework doesn't really resonate with a lot of people, but plays well here. Plays well in DC, where you know you're appealing to donors and things like that. So it might, maybe to the wealthy who are going to contribute to your organization, sure. But MoveOn's impact has always been keeping members and working people and frontline communities front and center throughout everything. So I think this is a good example of how they center that messaging and center that delivery and that tactic in their ads. I'm glad you liked it. And thank you for the kind words. I know people are going to be excited about that.
Yeah. No. I mean, look. As I always say when you appear on the show, you know, I love the tireless work that you do, you know, especially on social media to spread the right sorts of messages and, you know, gather people in pursuit of laudable goals. And, you know, if an organization is doing the same thing, I think that we should support them too. So, as always, thank you. And thank you to MoveOn as well. If you come out with future ads, definitely send them to us. We can't wait to see it. There are a lot of justifiable fears about what future elections in the near future will look like in America. Many primaries have been delayed, and there are concerns about what the status of the country could be when it comes time for the general election much later this year. So joining us to help maybe break down some of the remaining concerns, see if we can figure out some of what needs to be done, national political correspondent for McClatchy, Dave Catanese, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Enjoyed an article that you put out just a couple of weeks ago about some of the uncertainty that a lot of political campaigns are facing when trying to figure out what are elections going to look like, who is actually going to turn out to vote. So what are your thoughts about this? What are some of the things that we can sort of agree on at this point?
Right. So we know that the federal government doesn't administer our elections, right? Our elections are run state by state, locality by locality. And when it comes to the presidential election, it's obviously state by state. So every state has different laws governing when you can vote, whether it be an early vote, whether you need an excuse to vote early or absentee, whether you can vote by mail. So obviously with this coronavirus pandemic, this has become a much more important factor in all of this, because every state is doing this differently, and campaigns are now trying to figure out how to put together strategies to reach these voters, whether it be a different strategy in one state that doesn't allow vote by mail, doesn't allow vote by mail by excuse, versus another state where they do. And that is leading to some questions about who's going to be able to turn out if in November we have a second wave of this pandemic or it is lingering. Who doesn't decide to show up? Are they fearful of contracting the virus if they're at a polling station? Does the law in their state allow them to vote by mail? And it really is across the gamut, different across the board. There is federal legislation the Democrats have introduced. Senator Amy Klobuchar and Ron Wyden have a bill that would allow vote by mail across the country, But that seems less likely to occur right now, just because Republicans are opposed to it. Republicans say it could lead to voter fraud. There are obstacles there in the Senate because it is controlled by Republicans right now. So really, this is going to be a state-by-state battle. So strategists are telling us that you could see a lot of special sessions through this summer and arguments about how to allow people to vote, how early they can vote, and if they can vote by mail without an excuse.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important that you point out that right now, the one of the sort of generally agreed upon by experts in terms of voter access and stuff like that is that we need more voter mail just in case. There is this big partisan divide in the acceptability of that at a national level, even though, of course, there are states that are traditionally red or have red governors that have very accessible, vote by mail. And I understand that there might be concerns about making it available across the country because, you know, they say voter fraud, whatever, we can agree to disagree there. But wouldn't some of these governors of red states, wouldn't they want to make sure that as many of their people can turn out to vote? Is it possible that even in the absence of some sort of unified national response, that some of the states that are generally red, that they might make it a little bit more accessible for vote by mail in time for November?
Yeah, and I would point to the Republican governors that are already challenging Trump on his coronavirus response. Look at Larry Hogan in Maryland. Look at Charlie Baker in Massachusetts. I think they're in that field of governors that is more likely to challenge President Trump on this, who has been the leading opponent, I guess, of vote by mail, even though ironically he voted by mail as a Florida resident in the 2018 midterm. So that's a little bit of an odd stance for him to take. But yes, I think you will see some Republican governors pop up. Now, where this is going to matter the most is, frankly, the battleground states that are going to be the most important to determine the presidency. Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Most of these states, now they vary a little bit, but most of these states have more liberal vote-by-mail laws as far as that goes. But remember, you could have legislative sessions that pop up this summer just because of the extraordinary pandemic that we're in that move to change the laws. So we're going to have to keep very particular eye on the state legislatures because they're going to have the power to decide, along with their governors, obviously, but they're going to have the power to decide how early someone can vote, how early you can get an access to a ballot, if you can vote by mail, and if you need an excuse to vote by mail. That's another important piece of this. Some states have vote by mail programs, but you need to be sort of out of the country, or you need to be sick or handicapped. Will they allow vote by mail, just a blanket vote by mail for no excuse, basically saying, I want to vote by mail no matter what, you don't need to know why? That's going to be a key portion for legislation in any of these states.
Yeah, I'm also, so obviously there's the vote by mail portion of it. We expect that there's going to be some, perhaps a lot of, people that are going to be or have to vote in person still at this point. Do we have any idea as of right now if there are going to be big differences? I assume based on age, there would be differences in people's willingness to turn out to vote. But in terms of like a partisan difference, I've seen polls, going back to the beginning of this pandemic, showing that at various points, conservatives or Republicans tended to take it a little bit less seriously or think that it was a little bit less of a threat to them personally. Is there reason to believe that might translate into a greater willingness to turn out and vote in person?
Yeah. Yeah, that strategists are trying to find this out. We sort of have one example of it happening so far, which is the primary that occurred in Wisconsin, the only primary that really has occurred in the throes of this pandemic. And basically, we didn't see record turnout. Obviously, the turnout dropped a little bit, but we did see Democrats overtake a Supreme Court seat. Mm-hmm. And at first, there was some concern that Democrats wouldn't turn out, that it might hurt their ability to turn out their voters. But they actually were able to win that seat. So that sort of threw a counter argument to who it might affect. Now, we actually have a primary going on in Ohio today, Tuesday. And, 20%, it was about approximately 20% requested a mail-in ballot. But you're going to have people going to the polls today. And that will be sort of an experiment of who turns out, where they turn out. Strategists are all over the place. Obviously, seniors are disproportionately affected by coronavirus and the risk of of dying from it. So they might be more fearful, those 65 and older brackets. Could that lead to helping younger people turn out more in some way because they are less concerned about it, because young people don't have that fear that they have a better mortality rate? That's a question that's really been untested on a national scale. We only have the Wisconsin case so far to look at.
And in your piece, you talked about how, you know, if there is going to be a lot of mail-in voting, that's going to affect the strategies that campaigns take. And I'm curious, you know, what forms you think that change in strategy might take. Particularly, I'm concerned for the presidential election. If you have a lot less voter canvassing and things like that, perhaps less rallies, perhaps less in-person debates, how are campaigns trying to plan ahead for that change?
Well, it becomes an educational piece that becomes really important. You would usually do this educational piece before the rallies. After the rallies, you'd have people with clipboards saying, are you registered to vote? Have you voted yet? Do you need a ballot? Here's where you get your ballot. Here's when you need to turn it in by. These are all pieces that aren't necessarily broadcast on television with the rallies, but they occur, and they're very important for campaigns. Now this educational component is going to have to take place through Skype, through Zoom, through virtual events. And campaigns are gonna have to be very reticent on knowing what date do they have to have ballots postmarked by via state. That will be a very important thing to watch, because November 3rd is election day, but some states may say your mail-in ballot must be postmarked by the Friday before or the Monday before, or maybe it's the Thursday after. Now, one model to look to is the West. A lot of the Western states do vote by mail completely. Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, they're already doing this. They have a complete vote by mail system. Mm-hmm. It's on the East Coast that doesn't do it as well and isn't as familiar with it. So the education is going to have to start now, and that's what the strategists say, that we have got to start communicating to voters now in these states, but also when there's an update to them, which could happen depending on the state, they're going to have to be very vigilant in responding to that and letting people know this is when you need to get your ballot postmarked in order for it to count.
Exactly. And it's important that people have a heads up now to be on the lookout for those sorts of changes and updates as they happen. And so for that, thank you for your work, Dave. We appreciate you focusing on this. It's going to be really important for making sure that the elections proceed as much like normal as possible. So thank you for your work.
We'll be watching it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.